7 minutes after 11 o'clock. This is 610 CKTV. Joining us every couple of weeks, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen. How are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. It's back to school. Whether or not your kid's going off to university or, you know, first day of junior kindergarten, it is back to school for the children.
That's right. Reality hits.
Reality hits for all of us. Now, I thought it was interesting. You sent me a note, and we'll talk about this. McLean's Magazine has, on their cover story, they talk about the broken generation. Who is the broken generation, and how are they broken?
Well, this article actually is focusing on college and university students, and they're talking about the mental instability and how rampant it is among this age group. And this is a big concern for me. This is why I wrote my last book, Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, is because of this phenomenon going on where we're seeing more and more depression, more anxiety, more OCD, young people, any age, for example, that are more prone to addiction simply because of this mental instability. So, and the tragedy to me is that the people who are in charge of this phenomenon, these health experts, are talking a lot about this problem and talking to these young people and using talk therapy as a modality to help them, but they're ignoring a big component of what is causing a lot of this mental instability in the first place, and that is malnutrition.
And so we have these, I mean, when you look at some of the numbers that are cited, mm-hmm. and how we have a growing awareness for mental health issues on campus, and how many students feel stress, anxiety, depression, the suicide numbers, which are shocking in terms of what goes on campus. I mean, the numbers are just astronomical, and you don't think it's just merely a separation of child from parent or the pressures getting to them.
No, it's not. I don't believe that at all. When I was young, we had the same pressures, very similar pressures. I mean, sometimes, in some instances, you could compare some of the pressures I had when I was younger that they might have been even worse during my generation. But today, unfortunately, the notion that there's more stress or more pressure on young people today is a bit of a smokescreen. We're dealing with a third generation of kids who have been raised on a diet that is deficient of some very, very key nutrients that support brain function. And every generation, if parents can get pregnant and do have children, every generation is getting weaker and weaker and weaker because of this malnutrition. And there's been people like Dr. Francis Pottinger who pointed this out years and years ago, back in the 1940s, when he showed in just cats, if you look at cats and you give them a diet that is straying from their original diet, from their primal diet, that the more you stray from your ancestral diet, then the more chances that there's going to be all sorts of not just physical health problems, but mental health problems as well. And what Dr. Pottinger found with his research with the cats was that after three or four generations of straying from their original diet, that the cats eventually became infertile. So not only were they displaying symptoms like arthritis and cancer, they were also becoming infertile eventually simply because they were not repleting the body with the right nutrients.
Well, okay, that's cats. But mm-hmm. Have we seen it? I mean, well, I mean, just think, to draw a parallel, we had the report last week about the calorie restriction diets and how many people took it up because it worked on mice, that mice live longer on calorie restrictions. And so then they did it on monkeys and they found out, you know what, monkeys don't live longer at all on a calorie restricted diet, that restricting calories, and monkeys are closer to men than mice are. So if it's an experiment on cats, do we have enough evidence, though, on people we see these same effects?
Well, we can see other researchers, like the research of Dr. Weston A. Price, and he actually studied humans and went into primitive cultures. And in primitive cultures where they were eating their ancestral diet, they had beautiful teeth. He hardly saw any cavities. The teeth were straight. They didn't need orthodontics. And when the culture was eating their ancestral diet, not only did they have healthy teeth, they also were healthy overall, both mentally and physically. He didn't see cancer. He didn't see heart disease. He didn't see diabetes. But when he compared primitive cultures to more modernized cultures that may have been, you know, a village or two away, where they were importing foods like bread and condensed milk and sugar and foods like that, then in the first generation after that, he would find children had lots of cavities, had crooked teeth, and then he would see the rise of chronic disease in that culture. So it's the research is there. He's not the only researcher who has done this type of work, but it's just a matter of displacing. What had happened was we started displacing the nutrient-dense ancestral foods and replacing them with foods that simply cannot sustain human health.
Is it a shock? I mean, here are kids, and maybe, you know, is it a shock for kids? First of all, they're going into an environment, and we've heard about the term Frosh 15, you know, and it may be, you know, for, they're eating the wrong foods and they're putting on pounds, but there's also a culture of judgment in terms of your food choices. And then they're leaving, perhaps in a best case scenario, a home cooked environment. And if you're going away to school, you're entering into a cafeteria food environment. It seems like, you know, unless you make the best choices all the time, it's no wonder the numbers are going up. Right. I mean, we're sending kids in a best case scenario from decent foods to, yeah, you know what, now you're getting cafeteria foods. And who knows how they're prepared.
Right. And these cafeteria foods, unfortunately, they're not putting the care and love into the foods that a home-cooked meal would be like. So it's, unfortunately, yes, I mean, in the cafeteria scenario, in the restaurant scenario, they're looking for profit. They're not necessarily considering quality or nutrition. And unfortunately, because so much of our wisdom around nutrition has been lost, young people today really have no clue about what good nutrition is. They may look at one of those quote-unquote health bars, you know, those, I don't know, granola-type bars, Tom, and on the label, it's got all these health claims on it.
Right.
Now, the vast majority of the people out there would actually believe those claims. They would actually hold on to those claims and think that what they're eating is actually healthy when indeed it's not. And these companies are allowed to make false claims. There's really no surveillance over these claims, unfortunately, we fall victim to eating a lot of these foods. I mean, I remember growing up and thinking that Carnation instant breakfast was a healthy food. You know,
the meal substitute.
Yeah,
I don't have time. I don't have time for eggs and toast and bacon. I'll just put this pouch in a glass and stir it up.
You know, and I was fooled just like the vast majority of the population. You know, when we want to know what is healthy, we look at people who were actually healthy, and that you have to go back in history, deep into our history, to find out what indeed sustained human health. And of course, the further we get away from that era when we were healthy, the less likely we're going to remember what healthy eating is.
But are you seeing a revival? I mean, are you seeing more and more people interested in going back in having, you know, three square meals, having calorie dense or nutrient dense foods, having more animal fats and proteins in your diet? Are you seeing more people going back? Because when you look at, you know, it just strikes me in the head that as we've replaced fat in our diet with carbs, especially North America, we've gotten more and more obese and we've gotten bigger and bigger mental health issues.
That's right. And I do see a huge trend in people realizing that they've been duped, that Canada's food guide is absolutely upside down. It's totally incorrect, a totally unhealthy diet. I did an interview last week with Dr. William Davis, who wrote the book Wheat Belly. And he started to say in the interview that he thinks that we're only about 6 months away from really getting this information out and making it more mainstream, Tom. So I'm hoping he's correct, because I've been fighting this big fight now for about 10 years, hoping to educate people about the dangers of reducing animal fat in the diet and replacing these nutrient-dense animal foods with more plant-based foods. And yes, I do see people gravitating more and more to that that ancestral diet. And the reason why they're doing it, of course, is because they have depression, because they have anxiety, because they have fatigue, all sorts of problems with their health. And they're realizing that the foods that they had been eating for 20, 30, 40 years were the wrong foods. So we're, you know that expression, Tom, what's old is new again. You know, so we're going back to our, traditional eating, and we now realize that it was indeed the healthy way to eat.
17 minutes after 11 o'clock, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen joining us on the program. We have to take a quick break. And Pamela, when we get back, tell me what you would teach students who are going away to school for the first time. Like, how would you say to them, listen, I mean, you need, of all the things you need during this next 4 years, what we're trying to do the most during these next 4 years is grow and shape your brain. This is it. I mean, we're not worried about you having the best looking body or running a 4-minute mile. You know what? You're going to university, as a learning experience at the bottom line of it. There's social aspects to it and there's, you know, financial aspects, but at the end, it's a learning experience. So tell me your advice to a student 18 years old and how to maximize their brain power through nutrition when we come back, okay?
Mm-hmm, sure.
18 minutes after 11 o'clock, I'm Tom McConnell. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. 23 minutes after 11 o'clock, Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. And Pam, if you were an athlete and you wanted to have the ideal diet, people would tell you, oh, you have to make sure you get enough protein to build your muscles, and you have to make sure you have enough fat for energy, and if you need quick energy, you need carbs, and people would focus so much more on what they need as an athlete. But as a student, considering how much you use your brain, this is it. It doesn't matter how fast you can run or how many pounds you can lift. What matters is that you have a healthy brain. What would you tell students that would be the ideal foods to eat to ensure that your brain is fully functioning?
Well, absolutely. They need lots of butter in their diet. They need lots of red meat in their diet, lots of eggs in their diet, these traditional foods that we know kept us healthy for generations. Unfortunately, we've been scared off of these foods, but see, these foods are some of the best foods that will help fuel a brain, whether one is young or old.
Okay, what's in butter?
Butter, it contains things like saturated fat, it contains cholesterol, and these nutrients are crucial for your brain to function properly. So anytime you hear anything about saturated fat joining the dark side, you must ignore that information. That information comes from a created science, a manipulated marketing-based science that was trying to bring up the edible oil industry in competition to the animal fats. And so what happened over the last several decades is they've done a very clever campaign to demonize foods like butter and replace and convince us to replace butter with the edible oils like soy and cotton and corn. And these foods actually damage the brain. So we want to disregard that research because it's extremely flawed and manipulated research. And we want to eat saturated fat. We want to eat dietary cholesterol. They're your friends, not your enemies.
So do we see, I mean, in your book, the last book you wrote, I'm sorry, was
Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic.
Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, right. And you talk about mental health issues and addiction being primary among them. And were you finding that there were, I mean, addiction just being one, I guess, for lack of a better term, mental health challenge, that there was, that there's a connection between the insufficient diets that that people eat and having a problem like addiction, and that you could see that by having a proper diet, that those brain issues, and that's what people always forget. The most important organ in our body is our brain, and we have to make sure we have a healthy, active brain. Were you seeing a connection?
Oh, I see that connection every single day. When people come to me and they have depression, fatigue, anxiety, OCD, bipolar, you name the condition. When they come to me and they have these debilitating mental issues, and I get them to start increasing their quantity of animal fat in the diet, I get them to do a full program on top of that to help balance out their biochemistry. And then what I get to see is people get their lives back, Tom. I love what I do because I get to see people recover. It takes a long time, though, to get the biochemistry back. People must be very, very patient. You can't just start eating animal fat, for example, and expect to see
changes instantly
right away, because the damage has been done, and it's been done over many, many years. So to undo that damage, you must be incredibly patient and incredibly disciplined as well.
So don't you see the exact parallel in terms of what McLean's magazine describes as the broken generation, and then the problems you outlined in addiction, the hidden epidemic? Isn't that like they're the exact same thing?
They're the exact same thing. It's essentially, the problem is something I like to call brain starvation, that why we're seeing so much depression today. And by the way, we're 100 times more likely to be depressed today than we were 100 years ago. And look what's happened to our food supply over the last 100 years. We have all these newfangled foods sitting in the grocery stores that are simply not sustaining our overall health, including our mental health. So over the last 100 years, it's just no wonder that we've seen this rise in things like depression. And there's another phenomenon affiliated with that, Tom, and that is that when people have a quote-unquote mental disorder, which is actually just a biochemical imbalance, but when they go for treatment, and if they do get medications. The sad thing is the medications have, in many cases, very debilitating side effects, including homicidal and suicidal thinking, obsessive compulsive thinking. So it's called medication madness, and Dr. Peter Bregan, who's a psychiatrist, coined that term and wrote a book about it. And as a psychiatrist, he sees so many of these symptoms that are actually exacerbated because of people taking medications. Now, I'm not suggesting anybody just run out and stop taking their medications, but I work with people who are on medications every day, and I tell them, you know, they must work with the doctor accordingly. But as their biochemistry gets stronger, they can work with their doctor to come off the medications. And that happens as the biochemistry becomes more and more stable, the mood becomes more and more stable, and they can actually go on and lead very fulfilling lives as they're stronger physically.
It's the cover issue on McLean's magazine this week. It's called The Broken Generation. Pam Colleen, I appreciate, as always, your insights and your comments today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Tom.
Have a great couple of days.
Will do. You too.
Eat healthy. I don't have to tell you that. She knows that. All right, 11:28 our time. My name's Tom McConnell. When we come back,